Now the handout, 24 conditions, 24 conditions. So this is according to Lady Seattle. As I said last time, it is also the opinion of Burmese teachers. So if you look at this chart, you know which conditions can be included in which of the four conditions. So the four conditions are Aramana, Upanisaya, Kamma, and Atti. And then on the left column, there are conditions and their varieties. And on the right hand column, there are the conditions in which they can be included. So, for example, Aramana Dibidi can be included in Aramana Upanisaya and Atti. And Sahajada Dibidi Kunesan predominance can be included in Atti and so on. So later on, if you want to know which condition can be included into which, you just refer to this chart. And then the other one is Panyadi, and I've already explained this. It is just for your reference. And then for section 32, that means the last verse in chapter 8, I gave two translations. The first one translation is the usual translation accepted by many teachers, and the second translation is an alternate translation by one teacher. So whatever or whichever translation we follow, the meaning is the same. So the meaning conveyed by this verse is that when you hear a sound, there is first the ear consciousness, thought process, and then following it, mind or thought process, which is not mentioned by name. And then there is another mind or thought process that takes the nama panyadi as object. And last, there is mind or thought process taking the atta panyadi, thing concept, as object. And then we had a problem last time with Paticchasamubbada. The chart is correct. It is in accordance with Visuddhimagga. So in the Visuddhimagga, it is expressly said that at Pavati, the Kamavachara Kusala is conditioned in two ways to seven vipaka chedas, that is, accepting santirana upekha. And I try to find the reason why santirana is accepted. But I do not find the answer in the commentary to Visuddhimagga or the Burmese translation to Visuddhimagga. And this commentary on Paticchasamubbada appears in the Sammoha Vinodani also. Sammoha Vinodani is the second book of the commentary to Abhidhamma. They are also the same explanation is given, and one Burmese translation to that gives the reason here as because it is not relinking moment, the Santirena Ubeka is accepted. Then we already thought of, right? Although there is no very satisfactory answer, I think we must accept that because here the author wants to show the resultant consciousnesses which are supported by or which are the result of the past karma, vajra karma. Because when if the other wanted to include everything that arise during lifetime, he would have said all 16 and not just 7. So it may be that the other wanted to divide those that arise at Padisandhi only and those that arise at Bhavati only, and he wants to have them separate. Maybe that is the reason why during the Padisandhi moment, 9 resultant consciousnesses are given, and during the Bhavati, only 7 are given. So I cannot think of more reasonable or more acceptable answer. Okay. So this, we finish the 8th chapter. Now we come to the 9th chapter. And I think 9th chapter is more interesting than maybe the other chapters. The other chapters are difficult. But now we come to more familiar grounds, because all of you have practiced meditation, and also there are no intricate combinations of citta, chetasika, and also of rupa in this chapter. So it is, I think, more or easier, easier chapter that is to understand. Okay, now the 9th chapter deals with meditation, samatha meditation and vipassana meditation. So up to 8th chapter, the author described chetas, chetasikas, rupa and nibbana and the intricate combinations and many other things that are taught in Abhidhamma. Now he wanted to show us how, after understanding the nama and rupa, maybe theoretically, now we must do something to understand them through self-experience. So this chapter, the last chapter, deals with Buddhist meditation. And as you know, there are two kinds of Buddhist meditation, samatha and vipassana. First, the word meditation. The Pali word for meditation is kammatthana. Kammatthana is explained as field of action. That means the place of the arising place of bhavana, action. Kamma means action, and here this it actually means bhavana, mental development. So the place of mental development is called Kammatthana. So in this sense, Kammatthana means the object of meditation, like the 10 kasinas, 10 asubhas, and so on. Another explanation is that it is the proximate cause of higher mental development. That means if you do not do a lower mental development, you will not reach the higher mental development. So the lower mental development is called Kammatthana, the proximate cause of mental development, the higher mental development. Because without the lower mental development, we cannot get to the higher mental development. For example, in the Vipassana knowledges, if you do not reach the first Vipassana knowledge, then you will not reach the second, and so on. So the first Vipassana knowledge is development of first Vipassana knowledge is a proximate cause for second Vipassana knowledge, and so on. So the word Kammatthana has two meanings. The first is the objects are called Kammatthana. The second, the subject, the development, that means Cetas and Cetasikas, are called Kammatthana. And there are two kinds of Buddhist meditation, Samatha and Vipassana, or calm and insight. And Vipassana is distinctively Buddhistic form of meditation. That means you find Vipassana only in Buddhism. But Samatha meditation you find in other non-Buddhist schools of meditation also. According to the commentaries and the other books, even what we call Taitiyas, even those who have wrong views can practice with Samatha meditation, and they can get jhanas and even abhinyas. So Samatha meditation is not peculiar to Buddhism, but Vipassana meditation we find only in the teachings of the Buddha. And the teachings of Samatha meditation is taught because the serenity and concentration which it engenders provide a firm foundation for the practice of insight meditation. Now, Buddha taught Samatha meditation actually to be used as a basis for Vipassana meditation. Just Samatha for Samatha's sake was not taught by the Buddha. So when Buddha taught Samatha meditation, he always wanted his disciples to go forward to Vipassana meditation. So they may practice Samatha meditation and get jhanas and so on, but they are not to stop there or satisfied with only the attainment of jhanas and abhinyas. So they are to make the jhanas as the object of meditation and practice Vipassana. So both Samatha and Vipassana meditation are, say, taught in Buddhism or taught by the Buddha. Now, the word Samatha is translated as calm or tranquility. The word means something that makes peaceful, that makes some other thing peaceful. It is derived from the root sam, meaning to become peaceful. Now it makes what peaceful. Peaceful means calm down or suppressed. Now, when there are mental hindrances in the mind, samatha does not arise. So only when mental hindrances are subdued can samatha arise. We will see it later. So samatha is the meditation which calms or which subdues the mental hindrances. You know, mental hindrances are also mental defilements. The nivaranas and kilesas, they belong to kilesas. So, a form of meditation which helps us to calm or to subdue the mental hindrances is called samatha meditation. Now, what about arahants practicing samatha meditation? Suppose a person becomes an arahant first, and then he wants to get jhana, and so he practices samatha meditation. In his case, samatha does not mean calming down the mental hindrances, because an arahant has no mental hindrances. So in his case, samatha meditation is one that calms down his mind. That means when the mind has to take different objects, it is not calm, it is not quiet. So in order to make their minds quiet, and in order to experience the bliss of seclusion, arahants may practice samatha meditation and get jhana. So when they get jhana, their mind can be on one object only for some period of time, and so during that time, their mind is tranquil and peaceful. So, okay. Then what about second jhana and so on? Now, first jhana inhibits or subdue mental hindrances. But second jhana does not need to subdue mental hindrances, because mental hindrances are already subdued just before the first jhana. So in the case of second jhana and so on, samatha means those that make the grosser factors tranquil. That means that inhibits or that subdues grosser jhana factors. Second jhana, when you get second jhana, you eliminate what? Vitaka, right? So when you get third jhana, you eliminate vichara and so on. So in that case, the jhanas, the second jhana and so on, subdues or eliminates these grosser jhana factors, and so they are called samatha. The second is vipassana, and I have talked about vipassana many times, and you already know what vipassana is. So vipassana is seeing in various ways, and seeing in various ways means seeing mind and matter, or seeing conditions, things as impermanent, as suffering, and as no soul or non-self. Now, vipassana is a chetasika of wisdom. That means vipassana is synonymous with panya. So it is the chetasika. What chetasika? Amoha, right? And what is the samatha? Ekagata, right? Or samadhi. So samatha is synonymous with samadhi, and vipassana is synonymous with panya or amoha. The explanation of calm and insight meditation in this chapter of the Abhidhammata Sangha is a summary of the entire Visuddhi Magga. So if you want to understand in greater detail, you have to read the Visuddhi Magga, which is about 800 pages thick. A very detailed explanation of both samatha and vipassana meditation. And as we go along, say, I will give you some references to Visuddhi Magga so that if you want to know more about meditation, you can read Visuddhi Magga or the Path of Purification. Now first, the author gives us the seven sections on samatha meditation, page 330. They are in the compendium of calm. First, the compendium of meditation subjects for developing calm is sevenfold. So samatha meditation is divided into seven sections. 1, 10 kasinas. 2, 10 kinds of foulness. That means foulness of the body meditation. 3, 10 recollections. 4 illimitables. I prefer the word limitless. So 4 limitless ones, and 5 one perception, 6 one analysis, and 7 4 immaterial or arupa states. So these are the seven sections, and they will be explained in more details as we go along. And after that, after these, the author gives us the six kinds of temperaments. And they are: 1, the lustful temperament; 2, hateful temperament; 3, deluded temperament; 4, the faithful temperament; 5, the intellectual temperament; and 6, the discursive or thinking temperament. Now, temperament means something that happens to a person as a habit, or something that a person has more of it than other persons. For example, if a person has a lustful temperament, then he will have more attachment to things. He will like more beautiful things and so on, and more than other persons. And so here the temperaments are said to be six kinds. And the temperaments of people differ owing to the diversity of their past karma. So why are there people who have lustful temperament or hateful temperament and so on? The answer is their past karma. When they do their past karma may be surrounded by lobha, or surrounded by dosa, or surrounded by moha and so on. So depending on that, these people in this life, have a lustful temperament, hateful temperament, and so on. among them, lustful and faithful form a parallel pair. They are similar. Both involve a favorable attitude towards the object. So, when you are attached to something, you have a favorable attitude towards the object, and when you have faith in something, you have a favorable attitude towards it. So they are similar. And then, hateful and intellectual temperament form a parallel pair, dosa and, in Pali, the word is buddhi. Buddhi and panya are the same. Since in an unwholesome way, hate turns away from its object. So when you hate something, you want to get away from that object. With intelligence, and while intelligence does so through the discovery of genuine faults. That means you come to see in impermanent nature, suffering and soulless nature, or foul nature of things, and so you want to turn away from these objects. So, dosa and panya both have this common nature. That means turning away from object. Hate turns away from object because it doesn't like it, and panya turns away from the object because it knows, it sees its faults, and so it wants to turn away from the objects. And then the deluded moha and the discursive vitaka temperaments also form a pair. A deluded person vacillates owing to superficiality. So he's deluded, he has moha, and so he doesn't know the object well. And with the discursive one, does so due to facile speculation. That means, since he has the habit of thinking, vitaka, he also vacillates. So, moha and vitaka are similar in nature. Moha is deluded, and vitaka is distracted, and so both of them do not know the object well. Later on, we will find which subject of meditations are suitable for which type of persons. And then, the three kinds of bhavana development. The three stages of mental development are preliminary development, parikama bhavana, excess development, upachara bhavana, or we may call it neighborhood development, and three, absorption development, appana bhavana. So there are three kinds of bhavana. Bhavana means development, or that ought to be developed. And there are three kinds of development. The first one is preliminary development. Occurs from the time one begins the practice of meditation up to the time the five hindrances are suppressed and the counterpart sign emerges. Now we'll learn about them later. So preliminary development occurs from the time one begins the practice. So from the beginning of the practice up to the time when the five hindrances are suppressed and the counterpart sign emerges. That means up to the time, but not including the time when five hindrances are suppressed. When the five hindrances are suppressed and the counterpart sign emerges, he reaches into the next bhavana. So from the beginning up till the suppression of five hindrances, just before the suppression of five hindrances, is called preliminary development. And then next is access development or neighborhood development. And that occurs when the five hindrances become suppressed and the counterpart sign emerges. This is the middle development, we can say, between the preliminary and the absorption development. So during this development, the five hindrances are suppressed, and so there are no hindrances in the mind, and mind is well concentrated, and also the counterpart sign emerges. That means counterpart sign arises in his mind. It endures on the moment the counterpart sign arises up to the change of lineage chitta in the cognitive process culminating in jhana. That means in a jhana thought process, up till Gotrabhu is called access development, upachara samadhi. So from the moment the five hindrances are suppressed, up to the moment of Gotrabhu, up to means here including the moment of Gotrabhu, is called upachara samadhi, access development. The chitta that immediately follows change of lineage is called absorption. That means after Gotrabhu, what follows? Jhana. And also Magga. But here, we are concerned with Samatha meditation, so let us say Jhana. So that Jhana is called absorption development. The chitta that immediately follows change of lineage is called absorption. This marks the beginning of absorption development, which occurs at the level of the fine material sphere jhanas and the immaterial sphere jhanas. That means rupa vachara jhanas and arupa vachara jhanas. So the preliminary development first, that means from the beginning to just before the mental hindrances are suppressed, and then upachara access development when the mental hindrances are suppressed until the moment of Gotrabhu, including the moment of Gotrabhu, and then absorption development or apana bhavana begins with jhana chitta, which follows Gotrabhu. So we must understand these three kinds of development: preliminary development, parikama bhavana, access development, upachara bhavana, and absorption development, apana bhavana. Next are the signs, nimittas. There are three. Parikama nimitta, ugha nimitta, padibhaga nimitta. The first is parikama, so preliminary sign. The second, ugha nimitta, the learning sign. And the third, padibhaga nimitta, the counterpart sign. Now, translating ugha nimitta as the learning sign is a little not to the point. Ugha can mean learning. So when we want to say somebody learns something, we use the word say ugnadi. But here I think the meaning is to take. So ugha nimitta means the nimitta taken by the mind. That means memorized sign. When you practice kasina meditation, first you look at the kasina disc, and then you memorize it again and again, so that you can see the kasina disc with your eyes closed. So that sign is called ugha nimitta. So how do we translate it? Memorized. Memorized sign. Now, the preliminary sign is the original object of concentration used during the preliminary stage of practice. That is, during the preliminary development. The learning sign is a mental replica of the object perceived in the mind, exactly as it appears to the physical eyes. So that is called ugha nimitta, memorized sign. So during this stage, the memorized sign is an exact replica of the object, let's say, of the kasina. That means if there are blemishes on the kasina, like impressions of the fingers or the hand, then the ugha nimitta also has these blemishes. So it is the exact copy of the kasina object. The next one, the mentally visualized image freed of all defects in the counterpart is the counterpart sign. So a person tries to practice meditation on that memorized sign again and again and again, and so that memorized sign becomes clearer, and also it becomes free from the defects of kasina. It appears as if breaking out from the memorized sign and 100 times or 1,000 times more purified, like the moon's disk coming out from behind a cloud, or like a bird, I mean, a white bird, what do you call it, heron? Like a heron flying in before the rain cloud. That means it becomes very clear, very pure, like a polished mirror. So when it becomes a counterpart sign, it is not the exact copy of the original kasina sign, because original kasina sign may have defects, but in the counterpart sign, there are no defects. And here also, the word counterpart. Counterpart here means similar or same. So the sign which is the same as the kasina object or kasina disc. Later on, we will learn the combination of the bhavanas and nimittas, combination of development and signs. what sign corresponds with what development, and so on. Okay, now comes the detail, just a little bit more detail than the previous statement. Now, the 10 kasinas, now they are Pathavi kasina, right? Earth kasina, water kasina, fire kasina, air kasina. These are the four essentials. And then the blue casino, blue color casino, yellow casino, red casino, white casino. So they are color casinos. And then space casino, like a hole, and the light casino, light. So there are 10 casinos. Now the word casino means whole or totality. It is so called because the counterpart sign is to be expanded and extended everywhere without limitation. I try to find this explanation in other books, but I don't. Now, actually, it is called casino because when you take that casino as an object, you have to take the whole of that object. You are not to take just a part of that object. So that is why it is called casino. For example, you make a casino disc, right? And then you look at the casino disc, not just at the center or at the edges, but you take the whole of this disc as an object. So that is why it is called casino. The word casino means all or whole. Now, in the case of Earth Casino, one prepares a disc of about 30 centimeters in diameter. In the books, it is said one span and four finger breadth. It's about maybe 8 inches or diameter, 8 or 9 inches in diameter. Covers it with clay. The color of dawn, maybe red color, and smooths it well. This is the casino disc, which serves as the preliminary sign for developing the Earth Casino. So you put clay on the, maybe you make a, what do you call that, frame, and then put a cloth on it, and you may put clay on the cloth, and then you make it a circle, and you smooth it with your hand and maybe with some wooden thing. So, one then places the disc about a meter away. That means neither too close nor too far away from you, and concentrates on it with the eyes partly opened. That means sometimes open, sometimes closed, contemplating it as earth, earth. So you may see this earth, 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 earth thousands and thousands of times until you get the image in your mind. So you look at it and say earth, 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 and then you close your eyes and say earth, 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 see, to see whether you have memorized it. If you have not, then you open your eyes again. So alternating eyes, with the eyes open and closed, you try to concentrate on it as earth, 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 earth. And it will be described later on through the practice of casino meditation. Now, to develop the water casino, one may use a vessel full of clear water and contemplate it as water, water. Or you may just look at water in a lake or something, and then you try to limit some space in the water and look at that space, that area. to develop the fire casino, one may kindle a fire and view it through a hole in a piece of leather or a piece of cloth, saying, fire, 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 fire. One who develops the air casino concentrates on the wind that enters through a window or an opening in the wall, saying, air, air, air. To develop the color casinos, one may prepare a disc of the prescribed size and color and color it blue, yellow, red, or white. These are the four colors which are described, which are used as a, what do you call that? Stock phrase or something like that. Whenever the colors are mentioned, the Pali words Nila, Pida, Lohida, and Orada are mentioned. And as I said before, the word Nila is translated as blue. And you see the blue color on the Buddhist flag. But in Burma, we translate it as brown. So, blue or brown. I think both are correct. Because, you know, there is a lotus called blue lotus, right? In Burmese, we call it brown lotus. But the color is blue. And also, the hair is said to be nila. So hair is not blue, right? Hair is a black or maybe a brown. So we may translate it as we like, blue or brown, yellow, red, white. Then one should concentrate upon it by mentally repeating the name of the color. That means blue, 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 or yellow, 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 and so on. If you want to practice Kala Kasina, you can paint a circle on a board and then look at it. Now, the light Kasina. Oh, wait a minute. One may even prepare an object from flowers of the required color. So you may gather some flowers and put them like it. Circle, a round thing, and look at the flowers and say blue, 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 or yellow, yellow, yellow. The light kasina may be developed by concentrating on the moon or on the unflickering lamp light, steady lamp light, or on a circle of light cast on the ground, or on a beam of sunlight or moonlight entering through a wall crevice or hole and cast on a wall. So some light, and preferably that comes through the hole, so you see it as a round object. The space kasina can be developed by concentrating on a hole about 30 centimeters in diameter, contemplating a space. So you may look at the pot and you may see that hole, and then you see space. Or maybe a hole in the wall, and you may look at it and say space. For a full treatment of the kasina, see Visuddhimagga chapters 4 and 5. So there you find how to make a kasina and what to do, everything given there. So there are 10 kasinas. You need to understand that there are 10 kasina meditations. And they are actually the objects made of earth or water and so on. And these can be the object of kasina meditation. So there are 10 kinds of kasina meditation. The next is the 10 asubhas, foulness, or unlovely. And these 10 kinds of foulness are corpses in different stages of decay. Now, when a person dies and is left as it is, then the corpse becomes bloated and then becomes black and blue and so on. So, the 10 foulness meditations, the objects of 10 foulness meditations are the corpses in different stages of decomposition. So the first is a bloated corpse. That means after 2 or 3 days, the corpse swelled up. And then the next is a livid corpse. That means now it has become black and blue. Then a festering corpse, that means pus of blood, maybe not blood, pus oozing out of the corpse. And then, what is next one? A dismembered corpse, that is maybe cut, an eaten corpse, eaten by dogs and jackals and others, a scattered in pieces corpse, a mutilated and scattered in pieces corpse, maybe cut and then maybe the parts scattered, and then bloody with blood, and then worm infested corpse. You may see worms in the corpse, and then the last is bones. Here it may be just one bone or a skeleton. So even one bone is called attika. So a person who wants to practice this meditation should go to a cemetery and then look at the corpse and develop foulness in it. It's very, very difficult type of meditation. And it cannot be practiced in this country because you cannot see corpses in this country. Or even in other countries, people do not leave the corpses at the cemeteries. And so it's very difficult now. And they are explained in Visuddhimagga in chapter 6. And then recollections. 10 recollections. One, recollection of the virtues of the Buddha. Two, recollection of the virtues of Dhamma. Three, recollection of the virtues of Sangha. Four, the recollection of one's own pure sila. Yeah, you keep your sila pure, and then you look at your pure sila, and oh, my sila is not broken at anywhere, any place. So my sila is pure, and then you get joy from it. So recollection of morality means recollection of one's own pure sila. And then number 5, the recollection of generosity. That means you make donations, or you make gifts, and then you recollect that generosity and you get joy from it. And then the next one, number 6, is the recollection of the devas. That means actually recollecting one's own good qualities. Making devas as witnesses. That means these devas are born as devas because they possessed such good qualities, and those good qualities are in me also. Something like that. So here, the mindfully considering, the deities are born in such exalted states on account of their faith, morality, learning, generosity, and wisdom. I too possess these same qualities. So, this meditation is recollection of one's own good qualities as saddha and so on. And the devas are just for an example. Say, these devas have the qualities and they were reborn as and in the exalted states, and I also have these qualities. And then recollection of peace, that means recollection of Nibbana, is contemplation on the peaceful attributes of Nibbana. And that is not seeing Nibbana direct, not realizing Nibbana, but contemplating on the peaceful attributes or peaceful qualities of Nibbana. Oh, Nibbana is peaceful, Nibbana is calm, and so on. And then, recollection of death is contemplation of the fact that one's own death is absolutely certain. So death is absolutely certain, that the arrival of death is utterly uncertain. So when it will come, nobody knows. It may come tomorrow, or it may come 10 years from now, or 20, 30 years from now. But it is definite that it will come one day. And then when you practice recollection of death, you say, death will come, or I will die, something like that. And it is important that when we practice recollection of death, we must be very careful. Because when we think of death, sometimes we may get frightened if we have not developed the understanding of life, then we may become afraid, because we have to think of our death. So when we think, I'm going to die, then we become afraid. So it is important that we do not become afraid, but just understand it as absolutely certain, and that one day it will come. And when death comes, one must relinquish everything. So we must leave everything behind and go alone. Mindfulness occupied with the body, that is 32 parts of the body meditation, is a contemplation of the 32 repulsive parts of the body, hairs of the head, hairs of the body, and so on. And what is most popular is the first five parts: head hairs, body hairs, nails, teeth, skin. And then if you want to practice this meditation, first you learn the names by heart, and then you recite it, you recite the parts back and forth for many days. So first verbal recitation, and then mental recitation, and then try to see the foulness in these parts. And the last one is mindfulness of breathing, is attentiveness to the touch sensation of the in-breath and out-breath in the vicinity of the nostrils or upper lip. So when you breathe in and breathe out, you feel the air at the tip of the nostrils, or sometimes on the upper lip. So wherever you feel that sensation, you put your mind there, and then try to be mindful of in breath and out breath. That's in out, wherever the air is felt striking as one breathes in and out. So when you practice mindfulness of breathing as samatha meditation, then you try to concentrate on the breath only and not on other objects. And also you have to do counting, like in one, out one, in two, out two, and so on. And up to five, or up to six, or seven, or eight, or nine, or ten. But you must not go beyond ten, and you must not go below five. But if you want to practice mindfulness of breathing as vipassana meditation, then you try to see the nature of breath, which is vayo, which is air, or the movement, the nature of movement there. And you pay attention to other objects as and when they become prominent at the present moment. So that is a difference between samatha and vipassana regarding mindfulness of breathing. So the breath can be object of both samatha and vipassana meditation. They are called 10 recollections. Actually, mindfulness of the body and mindfulness of breathing and they are not recollection actually, but they are included in the 10 recollections. If you look at the words in Pali, you will see that now Buddha nusati, right? Anusati, Dhamma nusati, Sangha nusati, Sila nusati, Jaga nusati, Devada nusati, Upasama nusati. But with death, marana, we have not marana nusati, but just marana sati. And kaya gata sati. Mindfulness occupied with the body. And then anapanasati. Now, there anu is not used. But they are all mindfulness meditation. On the 10 recollections, see Visuddhimagga, chapter 7 and 8. Then the illimitables, or limitless ones, they are the four Brahma Viharas you already know. Metta, Karuna, Mudita, and Upekkha. These states are called illimitables or appamanya. Also in Pali they are called appamanya. Because they are to be radiated towards all living beings without limit or obstruction. Now, the Pali word appamanya. The word comes from pamana. Pamana means limit. Appamana means no limit. Appamanya means having no limit. So when you practice any one of these four meditations, you take all beings as object. When you practice metta, you take all beings as object. When you practice karuna, you take all beings that are in suffering as object. And when you practice mudita, you take all beings that are in prosperity as object. And when you practice upekkha, you take all beings as object. So since you have to take all beings without exception, or since you have to radiate thoughts of loving kindness and so on to all living beings without limit, and these are called appamanya. So loving kindness is a wish for the welfare and happiness of all living beings. So it is a desire for the welfare and happiness of all beings. It helps to eliminate ill will or dosa. So metta is the opposite of dosa. Compassion, karuna, is that which makes the heart quiver when others are subject to suffering. So when you see other beings suffering, then you have this shaking in your heart. So that is called compassion or karuna in Pali. It is the wish to remove the suffering of others. Or you say, may suffering ones be suffering free. So that is karuna, it's not mudita. I mean, not metta. So it is a wish for beings in suffering to get free from suffering. And it is opposed to cruelty. So when you have cruelty, you cannot have compassion. And when you have compassion, you cannot have cruelty. So it is the opposite of cruelty. And the third is mudita, appreciative joy or sympathetic joy. That means you are happy with the other person's prosperity, other person's success. It's the quality of rejoicing at the success and prosperity of others. It is a congratulatory attitude and helps to eliminate envy. If you are envy, you cannot have mudita and discontent over the success of others. Then the last one is equanimity, upekkha. As a divine abode, is the state of mind that regards others with impartiality, free from attachment and aversion. An impartial attitude is its chief characteristic, and it is opposed to favoritism and resentment. Now, this is not feeling upekkha. This is tatra majjhadada upekkha. But it is accompanied by feeling upekkha also. So the upekkha is a state of mind that regards others with impartiality. That means whether a person does harm to you or does good to you, you are impartial. You do not like him, you do not dislike him, so you can take them with equanimity. And it is opposed to favoritism and resentment. That means it is opposed to liking and disliking. So when you have developed the equanimity, you neither like the object nor dislike it. And this upekkha is a very good tool in controlling our thoughts. That means sometimes you practice karuna and then you go beyond karuna and get angry because you are angry with those who inflict pain on others. And so when you are angry with them, then you are no longer in karuna. You have crossed over to dosa. But when you, if you practice upekkha, then you can stop just within the bounds of karuna, because you can say to yourself that all beings have karma as their own property, and they suffer because of their karma in the past, so I cannot do anything. And so I will not get angry with those who inflict pain on them and so on. So it is important that, we do whatever we can to help these beings get free from suffering, and that is a good thing to do. But when we cannot do any more, then we have to practice upekkha. And not that we are to ignore them altogether and no feeling for them at all, but we should help them. We should do whatever we can to alleviate or at least to diminish their suffering. But when we cannot do it any more, then we should practice upekkha. Otherwise, we will get into dosa. And these four are also called what? Brahma vihara. Living like Brahmas. It is said that Brahmas practice these four. Say, well, they have no other thing to do in the world of Brahma. So they practice these four. And so these four are called Brahma vihara. Vihara means not monastery. Right? Vihara means they are living. So Brahma means noble, or like Brahmas. So a noble living, or a living like that of Brahmas. So living like Brahmas, Brahma viharas. Metta, karuna, mudita, and upekkha. Now, one perception, one sanya, that is loathsomeness in food. The perception of the loathsomeness of food is the perception which arises through reflection upon the repulsive aspects of nutriment or food, such as the difficulty of searching for food, the repulsiveness of using it, the digestive process, excretion, etc. Now, in Visuddhimagga, it is explained in detail. Because, now, as a monk, you have to get up early morning and then pick up your bowl and go to the village. So when you go to the village, you have to step, sometimes you step on stones and thorns and all these things. And also, you have to look this way and that way so that the road is clear, there are no wild animals or whatever. And when you go for alms, sometimes you may get, sometimes people are respectful to you, or sometimes they may not be respectful to you, they may just say, get out or something like that. So you have to be patient with all these things. And then when you eat, you have to chew it. And then when the food is in the mouth and you chew it, it becomes, what do you call? I don't know. And then we do not do this. No? If you chew something and then you spit it out and look at it, will you want to take it again? So there is the loathsomeness of food there. So food is only good when it is before the, what about this? Yeah, throat or gullet? After it moves downwards, it becomes very loathsome. So we have to think of food as loathsome so that we are not attached to food. It may not be liked by many people, because nowadays you enjoy food and you don't think of food being loathsome. One analysis, that means cutting down into four elements. So the one analysis is the analysis of the four elements. The analysis into the four elements involves contemplation of the body as compounded out of the four great essentials, earth element and so on. And in Visuddhimagga, it is explained that you can practice this analysis into elements on the 32 parts of the body. So it may be connected with the 32 parts of the body. Among the 32 parts of the body, the first 20 are said to be those where earth element is predominant. Now, head hair, body hair, nails, teeth, skin, and so on. They are heart parts. So, earth element is predominant in them. Then, the other ones, like blood, blood, spittle, and so on. So they are the ones where water element predominates. So, you can think of these elements and then try to see the element of earth in them, or try to see the element of water in them, or you can be mindful of the breath and try to see the air element in it. So by taking or by analyzing these whatever objects you come to into four elements, then you lose the the notion of compact. So when you lose the notion of compact, it helps you to understand the anatta nature. There is no substance, no abiding entity, just no person, no man and no woman and so on, just these elements arising and disappearing. Then the last four, the arupa, immaterial states. They are the four arupa ones you already know. The four immaterial states at the base of infinite space, that is akasa, ananja, yatana, and so on. Now these are the objects of the four immaterial jhanas, the base of the infinite space. Now you already know that the object of the first is infinite space, and the object of the second, the first consciousness, and object of the third, nothingness. Nothingness of the first consciousness, and object of the fourth as a third arupa vajra consciousness. So these are the four immaterial state or four immaterial meditations, and they can lead to the attainment of four immaterial or arupa jhanas. So from the 10 kasinas up to one analysis, how many? There are 26, right? No, 36. So among them, some lead to the attainment of first jhana, some to all five jhanas, or some to four jhanas, and so on. So we'll come to them later. And the last four lead to the attainment of arupa vajra jhanas. So here there are four arupa vajra jhanas, right? Okay. So now we understand the 40 subjects of samatha meditation. Can you tell me the 40? 10 kasinas, 10 asubhas of foulness, 10 recollections, 10 recollections, and then? Four limitless ones, apamanya, one perception, one analysis, and four arupa vajra, right? So these are called 40 subjects of samatha meditation. Okay.